Very nice way to start a live music Friday here on WKAR. Ron Newman at the Studio S Steinway. Sonny Wilkinson will join him in just a few minutes here for some live performances throughout the course of the hour and some conversation as well. Sonny Wilkinson, Ron Newman today on Live Music Friday here on WKAR. I'm Mark Bayshore. We are glad you're here. Many Republicans across Michigan and the country are assessing how they feel about their party's presumptive presidential candidate, Donald Trump. Supporters often say his brash style and controversial stands are just what's needed to shake up Washington. But it's also not uncommon to hear remarks like this one.
I don't think there's any question the Republican Party is in complete disarray and it's in complete dysfunction. There are so many factions that spend more time fighting each other than trying to defeat Democrats. So I think it's just in complete disarray.
That's former state Republican Senate leader Ken Sikkema. It's all part of what Real Clear Politics yesterday called the GOP's maddening Trump conundrum. We welcome to Current State two mid-Michigan Republicans, neither of whom wanted Donald Trump as the party's presidential candidate. Saul Anousis was the chairman of Senator Ted Cruz's Michigan campaign. Saul, welcome back to Current State.
Great to be with you.
And Jeff Timmer is on the phone with us today. He was the Michigan campaign director for candidate John Kasich, governor of Ohio. Jeff Timmer, welcome.
Thank you.
Saul Anousis, briefly summarize for us your thoughts about Trump as the presidential candidate for the GOP.
Well, obviously, my first choice was Ted Cruz, and so I was a little bit disappointed. But, I'm a movement conservative. I kind of come at this from a little bit of a different perspective. So having a candidate like Donald Trump, who is a populist, who basically kind of swings with the mood with regards to where he is on the issues, concerns me a little bit. I don't know exactly where he's going to stand on any specific issue. I'm not sure where he's going to evolve to or end up on. So, I have some serious concerns, and obviously I'm going to listen, and I'm a delegate to the convention, so I actually will be one of those unbound delegates that have a vote in this process. And I think there's a lot of conservatives around the country that are kind of taking a wait-and-see attitude and taking a look at where Donald Trump ultimately ends up on some of the most important issues for us as a party.
Jeff Timmer, same question for you. How do you feel about Trump?
Well, I agree very much with what Saul said. Donald Trump is suspect on key issues. There are those who say, well, at least he's better than Hillary Clinton. And, what we've seen so far is not a single shred of evidence that says he's better than Clinton on any of the key issues. There's not a shred of evidence that says he can be trusted on any of the key issues. And there's plenty of evidence to the contrary.
You're both invoking concerns about policy. What about personality? Does Trump's brash personality concern you, Saul Anousis?
Yeah, it does. I mean, look, this is going to be the leader of the free world. This is somebody who has to deal with foreign leaders from around the world, obviously. There will be a lot of very controversial issues that come up and some very hot issues and some very important issues that ultimately might send our sons and daughters into harm's way. So to have somebody who is as flippant as Donald Trump has been, at least in debates and in his public persona, again, causes some pause, some concern. And I think that, you're talking about a position that, people are very frustrated. I mean, I think Trump is a phenomenon of how frustrated the American voter is, how frustrated they are with both of the leading parties, whether you're a Republican or Democrat. There's mass frustration out there. And Donald Trump is kind of the love child that has come from that. And I think we're in a very difficult situation today where people have to make a tough decision. Do you stay with a Hillary Clinton that's going to give us another 4 to 8 years of the same kind of policies that I think has really drove this country down in some pretty tough spots? Or do you take a chance with somebody like a Donald Trump? And I guess the third alternative is we still haven't gotten to the convention yet. And, there's a chance that this convention could, go a third way.
Jeff Timmer, what do you say to your fellow Republicans who like Donald Trump and say, hey, he's just the guy to shake up Washington? We hear that all the time from his supporters.
Well, I don't think a brash style or a bold style is necessarily a bad thing. I think the style that Donald Trump has demonstrated is a bad thing. And I think that it bodes poorly for Republicans running down ticket, not only in Michigan, but across the country. And I don't think a candidate who has said the things that he said that offend so many people when you have an 80% unfavorable rating among women voters in November. I don't believe a candidate like that can win, and I fear that, you know, it will be, to quote Donald Trump's favorite word, a disaster for Republicans down ballot unless we figure out a strategy to separate those other Republican candidates from Donald Trump and do it sooner rather than later.
Solon Nueces, you must encounter fellow Republicans who say, and to some extent, you probably would like to shake up Washington.
Well,
but why isn't Trump the guy?
Well, I'm not sure he's not. Look, my hope is that eventually I would like to support the Republican nominee. I would like to see us come out of the convention united. Because I do think Hillary Clinton is somebody that will be dangerous for this country and will put us in a position that I would not like to see. I think it will change the country as we know it today. So having said that, though, but there's still a lot of concerns, but there's still a lot of time. I mean, who is the real Donald Trump? He's a showman. He plays the game very well. He has been elected based on his bravado and how he's, you know, been able to entertain the country. And look, I think a lot of people want to shake up Washington, and I think that's one of the appeals that many of the candidates had. We had 17 people running for president of the United States, all of them offering a very different vision than Hillary Clinton was presenting. But Donald Trump now is the presumptive nominee. He has to make his case to all the Republicans. We're a center-right coalition. I mean, I disagree with Ken Sikkema that we're, you know, kind of in a that this party is in a disaster. We're a growing party, so we're having growing pains. We have the Tea Party movement, we have traditional conservatives, we have social conservatives, and so as we pull together as a party, it is incumbent on the presumptive nominee, Donald Trump, to pull this party together. And so far, you know, he's taking baby steps in that direction rather than basically saying, look, he's going to, you know, pull everyone together and actually put a argument forward that the center-right coalition can support.
Some Republicans, some of whom who have severely criticized Donald Trump, are getting behind him. Back in September, Louisiana Governor Bobby Jindal excoriated Trump, an egomaniac, not a serious person. It's all an act and the joke is on us, just a few of his comments. And though Bobby Jindal says Donald Trump has still not evolved, he now says he supports Trump in the presidential race. Here's Mr. Jindal on Fox News offering two reasons for his support.
One, that the people have spoken, and that's important. Unlike many in the establishment, I think it's important that we listen to voters in Republican primaries that are telling us they're frustrated and they're mad, not only at President Obama, but also at the Republican leadership. But secondly, and even more importantly, but we're down to a binary choice. It's either Donald Trump or Hillary Clinton. I don't like Donald Trump. I don't think he's a conservative, but I do think he is better than Hillary Clinton.
Jeff Timmer, could you respond to those? I mean, what about the anybody but Hillary line of thought?
Well, as I said earlier, I don't think there's enough evidence to think that he is the lesser of two evils. And there's plenty of evidence to the contrary. You know, we're facing a situation where both of the leading party candidates have the potential to drive our country off the cliff, and we're just deciding which car to get in. And I don't think that's much of a choice.
What about the Supreme Court decision that the next president is likely to make, Solon Nueces? Is that enough to make you reconsider your resistance to Trump?
Well, that's probably one of the leading criteria that actually makes me open to Trump. I mean, I disagree with Jeff a little bit in the sense that I think it is the, you know, what is the better of the two evils? I am not excited about a Donald Trump candidacy, but that doesn't mean I can't support him and I can't vote for him. I sure hope we have another alternative, and I still believe that this convention could be an open convention. You know, when the gavel goes down, if they don't change the rules, all these delegates become unbound, and anything could theoretically happen. Now, not likely, but there's still a lot of discussion about it. So this gives Trump an opportunity to kind of move in the direction and make the commitments that are important to conservatives around this country to make sure that we do have a better choice than Hillary Clinton.
If that unfolds just the way you described it, you're a delegate here. How will you vote in the second time around?
Well, it depends on the first time around. It depends on what my options are, right? So if there are some other options, some people were floating a Cruz Rubio ticket. I said, I think that would be a conservative's dream. I think that there are other candidates who potentially could emerge. But at this stage of the game, I mean, Trump looks like the presumptive nominee. Now it's up to him to unite the party. Now it's up to him to lay down his agenda that makes the party comfortable. I mean, if you take a look at these candidates, I mean, we knew where Rand Paul was on the issues. We knew where Jeb Bush was going to come from on the issues. Whether we agreed or disagreed, there was a philosophical basis to where they came from. Today, it's kind of just pure politics, and I'm not really comfortable with that. I want to have somebody, whether I agree or disagree with them, I prefer somebody with a philosophical grounding so I at least have an idea when I wake up the next day what's going to happen in this country.
Saul Anuzis was chairman of Senator Ted Cruz's Michigan campaign. Jeff Timmer also joins us. He was the Michigan campaign director for Republican candidate John Kasich, governor of Ohio. Jeff Timmer, yesterday Donald Trump met with House Speaker Paul Ryan, and last week we all know Ryan said he wasn't prepared to endorse Trump, at least yet. Now, today's reports indicate a pledge to work together to defeat Hillary Clinton, but still no endorsement. But in Paul Ryan's words, they're planting the seeds, I believe it was of compromise, planting the seeds of some kind of compromise here. How important is that? What do you take from the Trump-Ryan meeting?
Well, I think it's from Paul Ryan's perspective, he has to hold together a very fractious caucus in Washington, and which is now at the greatest strength since any time since 1920. There's more Republicans in Washington than at any time since 1920. And so his goal is to maintain that majority in the House of Representatives. And I think he's rightly concerned about the effect of Donald Trump's candidacy on his candidate's ability to win, given the campaign that Trump has run so far. And I think that's the reason for his caution and his lukewarm comments to date.
One feature of this that's intrigued me for months is Trump's immunity to any kind of policy litmus test. Now, you've both invoked concerns about policy here, but he has been pro-choice. He's voiced support in the past for single-payer health care plans, both of those unacceptable positions to many Republicans. And yet, in Donald Trump, you have a Republican candidate for president with that very history. What do you make of Trump's success, Saul Anuzis?
Well, I think that will be one of the most interesting post-election studies we've ever had. I honestly don't know. I think that this is reflective of how mad the country is. I think this is reflective of how frustrated voters are. And Donald Trump was able to kind of tap into that and take advantage of it. But the idea that voters are ignoring key issues, the idea that voters are ignoring his kind of bravado, the idea that voters are ignoring some of the things that he has actually done and supported in the past, just because they want to shake it up, just because he's someone new, just because he's somebody fresh, is worrisome. I mean, you know, you would hope that voters would have a little deeper philosophical and issue-based mentality with regards to doing this. And again, I mean, whether you're on the right or the left, my argument has always been, kind of get involved, support something, get behind the issues that you care about. And, some of my best friends are liberal Democrats, but we agree to disagree, but we have a reason why we're there. Here, it's kind of like, he could turn around and say, well, I'm going to do it this way this time around. And the flip-flopping is no longer an issue. And again, there's no philosophical basis. I mean, he's not a movement conservative. He's not a religious guy. He's just a very practical guy who wants to be president of the United States. And that is a little bit concerning.
To Jeff Timmer, to what extent do you feel the Republican majority in the U.S. Senate is at risk?
Well, I feel that the Senate is at great risk. And today would fall to the Democrats. And I believe for the longest time people thought the U.S. House was going to be safe, that they would recede in numbers but be safe from a Democrat takeover. I don't know that that holds true.
What about the House? I've even heard some people say the House could be at risk.
Oh, definitely the House could be at risk. The majority in legislatures are at risk. You know, I also disagree with what Ken Sikkim had said about a party in disarray. The Republican Party today is at the greatest strength of any time in the last 100 years. When you look at the numbers in Congress and state legislatures across the country, statewide elected officials across the country, and that could all be at risk in one election.
Yeah, but it's still a very fractious coalition, it would appear.
Well, it's a growing coalition. I mean, fractious in the sense that, you know, we have people who are passionate about the issues. What makes us fractious isn't personalities, it's basically issues. And so, you know, that's also our strength. I mean, we have Tea Party people who are very passionate about why they got involved in this process. We have social conservatives. We have economic conservatives. We have foreign affair hawks. All of these people come together because they believe in something, and they believe in a center-right coalition. And so I think that's part of our strength. And yes, absolutely, it's part of our challenge. But that's what party leaders try to do, is bring people together with somebody who ultimately, once an election is over, can unite this party and say, look, you may not have gotten everything, but you're at 80%, you're at 70%. And today, a lot of people are concerned if we're at 10 or 20%. And that's what we're waiting to see.
Michigan Republican Saul Anousis and Jeff Timmer are with me. We're talking about Donald Trump and his inside path to the nomination for Republican candidate for president. There's been plenty of talk of changing the convention rules. There's been talk of third party candidates. Jeff Timmer, given the resistance you have, what would you like to see happen in the next 6 months or so?
Well, what I would love to see is a viable third-party candidate who could deny Clinton or Trump some electoral votes in enough states to force the election into the House of Representatives. That would be the ideal situation if Trump emerges from the convention as the Republican nominee.
Saul Anousis, what about you?
Well, look, I'd like to see the Republicans win this election. And so, you know, from my perspective, you know, if I had a magic wand to wave today, I would see a Cruz Rubio ticket come out of the convention as a consensus that Republicans could rally around and actually win a November election.
What would you put the odds of that at?
1%.
Okay, not a lot of confidence.
I'd be happy to support that ticket. And I would have been happy to support any of the 16 other candidates other than Trump.
Assuming Trump is the candidate, tell me where each of you is on what you will do or who you will vote for in November.
Well, look, I'm taking a wait and see attitude. I want to support the Republican nominee. I want us to emerge from the convention united. So, if Donald Trump makes his case to conservatives around the country and we feel comfortable, I hope I will be jumping on that bandwagon participating. If not, you know, I don't know what I'm going to do.
Jeff Timmer, what about you?
I don't believe Donald Trump can be trusted. And if he emerges as the nominee, I don't intend to support either Hillary Clinton or Donald Trump.
Do you think Trump's success is a harbinger of presidential candidates to come? Do you think that this scenario that we've been watching, this brash shoot from the hip political novice, is more likely to be a part of the future because of his success this year, Saul?
No, I think he will be an example of what went wrong. I think that the American people will say, you know, we tried, we got frustrated, we went kind of off the cliff, so to speak, and we'll come back and start looking for rational, intelligent, thoughtful leaders that, you know, we traditionally elect on both sides of the aisle.
Jeff?
I agree. I think that this is the national equivalent of when Jeffrey Figer won the Democrat nomination for governor here in Michigan. It's a one-time phenomenon.
I sometimes view it as the reality TV presidential campaign, and I'm not sure reality TV is going anywhere, is not going away anytime soon. I want to thank both of our guests. Saul Anousis, former is the chairman of Senator Ted Cruz's Michigan campaign, and Jeff Timmer was the Michigan campaign director for candidate John Kasich, governor of Ohio. Thanks to both of you for joining us.
It's great to be with you.
Have a great weekend.
It's Current State's Live Music Friday here on WKAR. Sonny Wilkinson and Ron Newman are our live performers here today in Studio S. We're about to hear a song. What is it, Sonny?
It's Chick Corea's High Wire.
High Wire.
High Wire.
That's a fine performer from whose catalog to dip into here this morning. High Wire, Chick Corea. It's Sonny Wilkinson and Ron Newman.
All right.
Up on a wire, I long to climb and play with the sky. The people far below. The air is clear and I can perceive the whole world is smiling. Life is sublime, and when you dare to go up in the air and leave the earth far as I step and dip and leap into a space beyond the pie, just for a moment, alive and so afraid, but alive, and I push against the sky, I've finally broken free.
High Wire, performed by Chick Corea, that time here, Sonny Wilkinson and Ron Newman in Studio S here at WKAR. Chick Corea wrote that song or performed it? He wrote that song.
He wrote it. Tony Cohen wrote the lyric.
Okay. I was wondering who's responsible for the words
there. Originally
it was
done as a bossa, like a Latin piece, but we turned it into a waltz.
Very nice. Thank you. More from Sonny and Ron here before the hour is through on Current States Live Music Friday on WKAR. Yesterday was International Nurses Day. The event is held every year on May 12th to honor the birthday of Florence Nightingale, the founding mother of modern nursing. As we close out National Nurses Week, one group of Lansing area nurses is marking a bittersweet occasion. For the past 95 years, alumni from the E.W. Sparrow School of Nursing have held a reunion to reflect on old times. But this one will be their last. Current State's Kevin Lavery joins me now with more. Kevin, why is this tradition coming to an end?
Mark, quite simply, the alumni are getting older. The E.W. Sparrow School of Nursing opened back in 1901 on Michigan Avenue in Lansing, and it trained mostly women on site for 60 years. Yesterday, I met one of the last nurses to go through the program. Bonnie Clark is from the Sparrow class of 1960, the year before the school closed. And we talked about her long and rewarding career.
I practiced for 48 years, mostly in maternal and child health.
So does that mean you witnessed and helped a lot of babies come into the world?
A lot of babies, helped a lot of moms during their pregnancies.
You attended the Edward W. Sparrow School of Nursing, which no longer exists. You were part of the class of 1960. The school actually closed the next year, 1961. Tell us a bit about this piece of Lansing history, about this school that some people maybe have never even known existed.
That's right. A lot of people don't realize that there is a school of nursing that was open from 1901 until 1961 and graduated 1,017 nurses. And many of them served in World War I, World War II, the Korean conflict, Vietnam. Some went to the Peace Corps, others went on to mission fields. But when you think of 1,000 or more hands giving on-site care to people, that's a lot of nurses.
it was a dorm setting at the school. What was that type of camaraderie like for you each day as a student?
We had a three-year program at that time where we lived next to the hospital. And our instructors came there, and we did a lot of clinical experience at Sparrow. It was a community, and everybody looked out for each other. If you were in the dorm or if you were in the hospital and you had a big sis that was a year ahead of you, she made sure that you felt comfortable in your assignment and with the kind of patients that you were caring for. And there was a real feeling of unity among the nurses. And I always have said that Spiro graduates were the greatest ambassador for Spiro Hospital because we were so fiercely loyal to them.
I'm talking with Bonnie Clark, who is a 1960 graduate of the Sparrow School of Nursing. It was a facility run by the Sparrow Health System for 60 years, from 1901 to 1961. And this weekend, Sparrow's Nursing School is having its 95th and final reunion. Bonnie, you have been to many of these reunions over the years. What has that been like to see some of your, as you say, sister nurses who went before you and learned about their stories and their lives? What has that meant to you?
Well, it's always great to get together and talk about our experiences that we had here at Sparrow. And it's a little bittersweet to say this is our last one. But we voted a few years ago to not ever let anyone forget about the School of Nursing and started a scholarship to advance the education for nurses that work at Sparrow presently. And that will be our legacy, to help our sister nurses or the fellows in nursing to increase their education and thereby give better patient care.
What actually compelled you, Bonnie, to be a nurse in the first place? At the time you came into the profession, it was almost exclusively a female field, and at a time when there weren't many professions open to women aside from nursing.
It was an easy choice for me because I really knew that I wanted to be a nurse. And I knew that I wanted to work with moms and babies. And it was a wonderful career for me.
What was a memorable time in your career? Is there a story or two that really stands out, whether from school or in your career? Again, as you said, you've seen a lot of babies being born.
Well, I knew I wanted to see that baby being born. That was what I was really waiting for. And the first time I was allowed to be in the delivery for a baby's birth, I was marked right then. I knew that's where I wanted to spend the rest of my career. Then I went on and became a nurse practitioner and worked with many women over the course of the years and made many wonderful friends.
Bonnie, you've brought some artifacts from your career with you. I'm looking here at the very distinctly shaped nurse's hat. Tell me about your hat.
Well, we always wore our caps. And there was a real discipline back then about how you looked. And you would have never had shoes that weren't polished and well cared for. And we had our own cap that was distinctive to Sparrow School of Nursing, our own pin, and our capes, which we wore at all times going to and from the hospital.
Because there was really a public image to maintain.
That's right. And we would never have done anything to bring a bad name back onto our hospital. So we were very conscientious of how we looked, how we behaved, you know, whenever we were out representing the hospital.
Today I'm picturing nurses in scrubs. That's pretty much standard mm-hmm. uniform. Was there such thing as scrubs in the 60s?
Only in the OR.
Can you describe your cape? It's beautiful.
It's a federal blue, and it comes almost to the ankles with a bright red wool lining on the inside. And it has the initials of Sparrow Hospital on the top, and then our names were initialed into the inside of it.
It is in magnificent shape. You have taken very good care of it over the years.
I have. It's very special to me.
Also, you have a lamp here that looks like it's essentially a candle with a lampstand, copper, it looks like. It's reminiscent of the Florence Nightingale era of the 19th century.
Right, and that's what we carried when we got our caps. Our capping ceremony was held, and we really looked forward to being able to have a cap to wear. And that happened after our first 6 months in training. There were a lot of traditions back then, and I'm not so sure that there are in nursing now so much.
This will be the final reunion, the 95th mm-hmm. reunion for the Sparrow Nursing School. This is an era of Lansing history, an era of your life that is coming to a close.
It makes me sad, but I am really happy that we have this scholarship in place, that we feel that we will still be involved in nursing because we want to advance Sparrow's nurses to be better educated and thereby give better care. You never know when you're going to be a patient and that you would benefit from that. So it's bittersweet.
Bonnie Clark is a retired nurse and a 1960 graduate of the Edward W. Sparrow School of Nursing, which operated in Lansing for about 60 years. This weekend, Bonnie and her fellow nurses are having their 95th and final reunion of the nursing school. Bonnie, thank you for sharing your memories. Also, thank you for bringing some of your souvenirs.
Thank you. It's been my pleasure.
For Current State, I'm Kevin Lavery.
I see a rose from you among my souvenirs. A few more toes.
Current State on 90.5 WKAR. Friday means live music here in Studio S. Today, our very special guests, Ron Newman and Sonny Wilkinson. Ron at the Steinway and Sonny at the microphone. Here's an original composition by Ron and Sonny. It's called You and I.
Sunday morning, quietly out of bed. Orange juice, coffee, the newspapers read, gentle kisses that linger on with the dawn, greeting a new day, touching thank you. your hand, warm and sweet, covers mine, Valentine. Always you and I.
Husband-wife jazz duo Sonny Wilkinson and Ron Newman. It's called You and I, as they perform it live here in Studio S on WKAR's Current State. I've been thinking about having you guys on the show for more than 3 years. This is so overdue. Thank you. Thank you for coming here and being here today.
You are welcome.
Well, now, tell me about that song. How hard was it to write that song?
Well, I have to say, this was sort of an emerging kind of tune. Ron, why don't you say how it started?
A number of years ago, we got asked to write a tune for the MSU Children's Choir. And those of you that are familiar with it know this was an outstanding group. And they wanted a jazz tune. And I said, well, if I'm going to write it, it's going to be a real jazz tune. And we did it, performed it at an international convention in Minneapolis. Bass drums, the whole big, he had all these kids, you know,
yeah.
Improvising and doing it, and it was wonderful. And then they turned right around and said, we want another tune. And I said, great. And so I went in and I wrote this tune. And I handed it to Sonny, who is this magnificent lyricist, as you could tell. And it didn't quite come back so soon.
I don't hear the children's choir singing that one, to
yeah,
tell you
well,
the truth.
Here we go.
Sunday morning coffee on the brew, yes.
So what happened was that he finally gave me an ultimatum, and he said, okay, get down there and write a lyric. And I was a little annoyed and went, well, okay. And I marched down to the basement where we have one of our pianos, and I had a moment of clarity, which was, this isn't a children's tune. This can't be a children's lyric. Mm. This is a very adult love song, right?
Yeah.
So I proceeded to go to work and wrote an adult love song, you know? And I think it's a lovely piece.
Yeah.
Certainly not a children's tune.
It's easy enough to assume it was music that brought you two together, and I'm led to believe that was the case. How did that happen?
I had heard Sonny sing at least twice before we met. We met in Washington, D.C. through mutual friends, and long story short, we hit it off. I wound up going to California to visit her numerous times.
Did you grow up in a musical household, Sonny?
You know, I grew up in my dad was a Methodist preacher, and my mom was a singer. So there was music happening
all the time.
Sounds
pretty musical to me. Yeah.
There was music theater happening. There was Shostakovich happening. There was marching bands happening. And there were lots of hymns singing in four-part harmony. So, yes, very much.
What about you, Ron?
Oh, yeah. I mainly listening. My mom played piano. My dad did play some drums. A very musical family. my aunt was a marvelous pianist. And as Sonny was saying, we'd gather around doing hymns. And I remember just being awed that you could go anywhere and she would do it. And I just started liking the piano and got a lot of support from everybody.
Sonny, you attended Arizona State on a choral scholarship, but you also played the trombone. How interesting is that?
I know. I played trombone all through college and in the jazz band, actually. And I was fairly good on it.
Spent 15 years or so in Los Angeles?
Yes, pursuing really sort of the musical dream, and turned out that I was honed by fire by the best musicians in the world, doing session work and studio work and recording and live performances and that sort of thing.
Were you a solid gold singer?
Solid gold! yeah, baby, I was. I was indeed. That's hysterical. I talk about being honed by fire.
How many shows were you a part of? That show went on for years.
Right. I don't know. But one thing that I did that was kind of fun, you know, that was hosted by Dionne Warwick and also by Marilyn McCoo of the Fifth Dimension, a whole other era, right? But they would do these medleys and have artists come in and sing the medleys. So I would record the medleys ahead of time, and they would learn the medleys from the things that I did there. That was kind of fun.
Okay. Sonny Wilkinson and Ron Newman are our special musical guests here on Live Music Friday on WKAR's Current State. Ron, I was surprised to learn you declined a music scholarship at the University of Michigan. Why'd you do that?
I did. I you know, that was a long time ago. When I was, I played piano and clarinet. And, you know, when you get a senior in high school, you go out and you traverse around. And the specific reason that I did not go to the University of Michigan was because at that time, I wanted to be music ed. I wanted to be a band director. It's still something that appeals to me, as a matter of fact. But I would have had to make clarinet my major instrument. And I said, I'll be glad to play the clarinet, but I want piano to be my major instrument. And William Ravelli said, no, it has to be clarinet. Mm-hmm. Michigan State, meanwhile, said, yeah, you could do piano or clarinet. You know, we'll do them both. They were much more willing to work with me. And so that's why I wound up with this amazing long-term relationship here.
Very good. We want to coax both of you back to your respective positions and hear another song, if that's okay.
All righty.
That's good. I do want to say one thing.
Sure.
Got to congratulate WKAR for winning Outstanding PBS Station.
Yeah.
5 years in a row.
We are proud of that.
Congratulations to you and to Peter, especially Gary Reed. I mean, just one set of awards after another. Yeah. Congratulations to you guys.
We're all happy for the TV station, to be sure. And the radio station didn't do too bad in the MABs either. So Sonny Wilkinson and Ron Newman are our special guests here on WKAR's Live Music Friday on Current State. What are we going to hear, Sonny?
We are going to hear a tune that was written by Jimmy Van Heusen and Johnny Burke, kind of a standard now, called It Could Happen to You. One, two,
Hide your heart from sight. Lock your dreams at night. It could happen to you. Don't count stars or you might stumble. Someone dropped a sigh and down your toe. Keep an eye on spring. Run when church bells ring. It could happen to you. All I did was wonder how your arms would feel, and it happened to me. Hide your heart from sight. Lock your dreams at night. It could happen to you. Stars, my dear, you might stumble, 'cause someone dropped a dream, and down, 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 you'll tumble. Keep an eye on spring. Run when church bells ring. It could happen to you, 'cause all I did was wonder how your arms would feel, and it happened to me. Ron Newman at the piano. Thank you.
Keep an eye on spring. Run when church bells ring. It could happen to you. 'Cause all I did was wonder how your arms would feel. And it happened. Yes, it happened.
Sonny Wilkinson and Ron Newman together here in Studio S on Live Music Friday here on WKAR. I'm Mark Bayshore. Sonny, you're an artist in residence at both U of M and at Hillsdale College, and I'm led to believe you're both passionate about your teaching here. What sustains that commitment to teaching? What keeps that spark hot?
Well, things change, I think, as you get a little bit older, and I've been teaching for almost as long as I've been singing, but I feel finally like I've kind of emerged as a master teacher and can dig into the center of what these students need and help bring their voice and their philosophy of music and make it sort of an integrated whole, right? And in the old days, you would parrot what you learned from your pedagogy teacher, for example, you know, how to breathe, how to sing, how to make the resonant a resonant, the instrument a resonant complete one. But now I come in through all different kinds of back doors and interesting sounds and interesting connections to the body. For example, really quickly, it's all the rage, and even on the science shows on television, to talk about neural pathways, how they're established, how we get into a habitual state in what we do. So my job as a voice teacher is to change things from maybe some bad habits into some new, free, expressive habits. And it is so much fun and completely creative. And I have been blessed by having innumerable, extremely talented kids all over the country.
Now, Ron, as a fellow teacher, can you relate to what Sonny is saying? You're sitting there gazing at her as if this is the first time you've ever heard this, but I imagine it's not. Can you relate to what she just shared about teaching and about her role as a teacher?
Well, one of the beautiful things of a relationship like ours is that we discuss this all the time. And as you know, as we all know, there's a certain element when you're growing up that you think people over 40 are half dead, but in fact, it's kind of like, oh, I'm starting to get it.
Yeah.
And it's amazing how exciting it is at this point in our life to be able to say, wow, that was pretty cool. I'm going to try. She comes up with a technique and I move it over and I think about it in my classes. And we're both very involved with the science part of it. And as she says, it's very interesting how you can take what seems to be laboratory work dealing with brain cells, and all of a sudden you go, oh, this is going to help my piano playing. And absolutely, it
relates
very closely.
Yeah. Do you have a live performance coming up soon we can tell our listeners about?
Well, mostly we're starting to work on a new record, which is, speaking of long overdue, and it's with my band, Larry Ogletree on drums and Ed Fidua on bass.
Sure.
But we are playing at a little place in Battle Creek called Clara's on, let's see, June 22nd, 23rd, and 24th.
The summer solstice. Summer solstice jazz festival.
That's
with
right.
Sonny.
That's right. Oh, my gosh.
Sonny.
That's right over there.
Whoops.
And Ron. Well done.
Yeah. I have to say, though, next Friday, I'm sitting in with the brass band of Battle Creek. They're doing a tribute to Chicago and the rock bands, and I get to play obbligato piano with one of the truly great ensembles in the country. So if you're in Battle Creek next Saturday night, It's going to be a super concert.
So, Ron Newman and Sonny Wilkinson performing live. We'll have you play us out here in just a minute after I remind our listeners that on current state on Monday, Gretchen Whitmer joins us. She's just been tapped to fill the interim prosecutor's role here in Ingham County. She is the former Democratic leader of the Michigan Senate, of course. Gretchen Whitmer, our guest, and lots more planned for Monday. Sonny Wilkinson, Ron Newman, it's been a pleasure.
Our joy.
We will let you all play us out here on Current State.
All right.
This is just a little samba built upon a single note. Other notes are bound to follow, but the root is still that note. Now the new one is the consequence of the one we've just been through. Yes, I'm bound to be the unavoidable consequence of you. Boom, boom, boom. There's so many people who can talk and talk and talk and just say nothing. I have used up all the skill I know, and in the end I come to nothing, or nearly nothing. So I come back to my first note, as I must come back to you. I will burn into that one note.